You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges.
In the 5 weeks since the COVID-19 pandemic has struck the United States, more than 26 million people have lost their jobs and filed for unemployment claims. In this episode, we'll take a look at the employment picture, where we are today and where we might be headed. Joining me in the conversation is Mark Zandi, Chief Economist of Moody's Analytics. Thanks, Mark, for joining.
Thanks, Ramona. Good to be with you.
We're definitely in an economic climate that most of us living today have never experienced. So many jobs lost and in such a short amount of time. And when I was reading your most recent analysis, I was struck by the history, you know, kind of the historical perspective to start with. So could you bring us all up to speed on where we are?
Well, it's been devastating to the job market, to the economy, and obviously to the job market. When we get the data for the month of April, it'll show we've lost somewhere between 20 and 25 million jobs. Doesn't exactly line up to the initial claims from unemployment insurance you mentioned, but pretty close. That will wipe out all of the job gains that we experienced in the economic expansion, which is, as you know, was the longest in economic history. So takes out all of those jobs. Unemployment will likely come in somewhere between 15 and 20%. Hard to know precisely because there's some measurement technical issues there. But that will be the highest unemployment rate. You mentioned the Great Depression in the 1930s. That would be the highest unemployment rate since then. And that doesn't even do justice to the financial suffering here. That doesn't include a large number of people that will be pushed out of the workforce. To be counted as unemployed, you have to be out of work and actively searching for another job. And obviously, people can't actively search, so they'll be pushed out. So there's a broader measure of underemployment that includes those folks. That'd be closer to 25%. And just for historical context, the highest unemployment rate, recorded unemployment rate we have is 25%, and that was in 1933.
You know, you brought up the underemployed. There's so many people that were working part-time because they couldn't find full-time work. There are people who are, you know, working, living paycheck to paycheck, people not even counted on the employment rolls, as you mentioned. Those people feel, to me, always seem to be the most vulnerable in a downturn like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly this downturn, right? Because the most damage is being done to the leisure and hospitality industry, the retail industry. You know, these are industries that employ lots of people, but many of them are lower income, lower middle income households, and they're just getting completely crushed by this, hammered by this. And they don't have any other financial resources in many cases. There was a really good study the Federal Reserve did just about a year ago, and they found that almost half of Americans really have no savings. I mean, not even the savings necessary to, you know, fix a leak in the roof.
Oh, it's that $400.
Yeah, that's that $400, you know, threshold. So that gives you a sense of how many people are paycheck to paycheck. And obviously, this means people aren't getting, this COVID-19 crisis means people aren't getting paychecks. And those folks are just really struggling here, hoping that they get unemployment insurance or that check that the government is providing to most individuals. Hopefully, that comes in the mail pretty soon if they haven't gotten it already.
You know, something I was thinking about the other day is that in addition to the idea they've lost their job, if they had health benefits, you know, through the company they work for, those probably didn't carry over, you know, once they lost that job.
No. You know, fortunately, there is a ray of hope. Some large share of businesses are furloughing workers, so they're not actually laying them off. So when they're furloughed, you know, they're not getting paid, but they still hold on to those healthcare benefits in many cases. So that's a hopeful sign. And some of the programs the government's putting into place as part of the very various fiscal rescue packages is providing support to businesses to ensure that, you know, they don't lay off workers or they rehire workers they've laid off so that they can maintain health insurance if they had it for their workers. But you're right. I mean, clearly, you know, millions of people are losing their jobs, they're losing their income, and they're losing their benefits, including healthcare.
there were already some areas before COVID-19 that were struggling to find enough workers. This is something we talk about a lot at Working Nation. So, you know, cybersecurity or cloud computing, IT, those kind of jobs were struggling to find enough workers. Do you have any idea? Have you looked at any numbers? Have you seen if they're laying people off more? Or I know the cybersecurity need has grown because there's so much phishing going on, so many attacks against people working online.
Well, for the most part, the job losses are across the board. They're very broad-based. Every industry, occupation, region of the country, no one's really been able to avoid this tsunami of
healthcare, even, you know.
Even healthcare, doctor's office, dentists, healthcare centers, only the folks on the front lines battling the virus really have been able to continue to work. But there are some pockets where we're seeing some hiring. You mentioned cyber. I think, you know, there, I don't know that they're hiring per se, but, you know, at least they're not laying off. And then obviously there's jobs that are related to helping people in their sheltering at home. You know, the Amazon jobs would be Instacart, you know, those kind of jobs that are being created. Here, I have a good statistic for you that just gives you a sense of the deep and dark this is. We run a survey off of one of our websites of businesses that we've been doing weekly since 2003. And last week, not a single respondent to that survey, and there's several hundred respondents every week, said that they were hiring. That has never, ever happened.
When do you think we're going to maybe hit a peak and maybe start adding back jobs?
Yeah, I think we're at the peak of the problems. This is the apex of the crisis right here. I mean, we're already starting to see some parts of the country, Georgia being the obvious example, but there's other states in the South and parts of the Midwest that are starting to reopen and allow businesses to start hiring back and reemploying workers. They're early, probably premature, and you know that we may come back to rue this day when they decided to go down this path so early. But I would expect, barring you know another second wave or big increase in hotspots across the country, that we will start to see more openings across the country in different industries over the course of the next 2 to 3 months. And it will probably begin with construction. In fact, in many parts of the country, construction never was shut down. It was considered an essential activity. Here's another factoid. You know, roughly 50% of all jobs nationwide were considered essential. So they never, you know, they continued on. It's the other half, the non-essential workers, that are going to come back on over the course of the next couple, 3 months. Construction being one of the first, if it wasn't already considered essential. Like I live in Pennsylvania, construction was not considered essential. So it's shut down. And listening to the governor of the state, it sounds like he's going to open that up first, in large part because construction is going on around in other states. Manufacturing activities probably will be started up in general. You know, they're high value added. They're very important to just daily life. You know, we got to keep producing goods. And you can practice good social distancing within many of these establishments. You know, you have to have a plan and you have to execute, but generally they can work it out. This is a business that I would start up first.
What I was struck by was this idea, though, that say Georgia or wherever it is, that if a plant opens up, what if they get their parts from another part of the country, another state that's not opening up yet? I'm not sure how that's going to work.
That's a great point. I mean, it's a bit of a kabuki dance, kind of starting up an economy. Kind of the metaphor I have in my mind is, you go into a room of people. If you turn off lots of people, you turn off the light and turn it back on a second later, everyone's in the same place and, you know, everyone gets back to doing what they were doing. You turn off the light, keep it off for 10 minutes and turn it back on, then see where everybody is. They're not in the same place. And to get them back into the same places, which is what you need to do to get an economy functioning, is going to take time. It's going to be a process. And so that's why I don't think, you know, even when we start to reopen, this economy is going to take off. It's going to be a bit of a slog for a while. We might see a bounce to growth when businesses restart, but that's going to be a temporary bounce because it's going to take a while to get all the parts of the economy back in the same place and working together again. It's not going to be easy to restart this economy.
I also think there's going to be a problem with the parents, workers, the parents of who have kids at home, because childcare, no school. You can't even, you know, it's not even like they're going to be going to school for part of the day and you can work part of the day.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think we're a little lucky in that, you know, we're coming up on summer and K through 12 was ready to, you know, we're about a month away. I think most places will call it a year and, you know, because we're going to still be in lockdown in most places until May and June. And then we got the summer to kind of sort it all out. And then hopefully we can get sorted out reasonably enough that we can let the K through 12 schools at least open, you know, when we come back in September and people can get back to work. Because you're right, if you can't open up the schools, then it's going to be very difficult to get people back to work, you know, at least en masse, because we have many, many households with young kids in those households, and they're just not going to be able to work without open schools.
And also, if you bring everybody back too soon, I guess our biggest question is what's going to happen next? Is there going to be a second wave? And then what happens?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not optimistic, actually. I mean, you know, I look at Asia. I have a couple hundred economists who work for me across the world, and we have an office in Singapore. I think we have maybe 10, 15 people there. This Singapore is 7 million people, right? And it's very well managed. If the government says do something, people do it, you know, because they end up in jail if they don't do it. And even in that kind of situation, Singapore has had tremendous problems. They've had a second wave. They just closed down my offices again last week and closed the border with Malaysia. I think Malaysia closed the border with Singapore because Malaysia doesn't want Singaporeans to come across the border. So that just gives you a sense of our future. I mean, and that's, again, 7 million people, highly disciplined, well-managed, everybody gets tested, temperatures taken, and everyone's on the same page by definition. And, you know, think about, you know, here, 325 million people, 50 states, everyone's got a different view on how this thing should work. You got Georgia, Florida, Missouri opening up again. It just doesn't feel like we're going to get through this without another significant bout of illness at some point. So I think we just need to be prepared for that.
There's 18, you know, they're saying what, 18 months at least for a vaccine, I guess from the point of now, you know, or whenever they figure it out, they have to test it. So that's an awful long time for such uncertainty. I don't want to be pessimistic, but do you think we can come back from such a economic uncertainty?
We'll come back. It's just going to take us a while to get really back. It's going to be a slog. It's going to be two steps forward, one step back. It's going to be a process. Hopefully we get a little lucky here. Maybe we get the vaccine a little earlier. If not that, maybe we get some kind of treatment that makes this a little less scary for people, that people don't end up in the hospital to the same degree. Or if they end up in the hospital, they don't, you know, we don't see as many deaths. You know, if that's the case, then maybe we can navigate through. Maybe, you know, we also adapt, right? I mean, more people get sick. There's some herd immunity, hopefully. We have to learn more about that, I think. We learn about mitigating the virus. You know, we get good at taking temperatures, social distancing, other measures. You know, we're pretty good at adapting, and, you know, maybe we can figure a way around this. But, you know, all those things said, I do think it's going to be a difficult process. It's going to take time.
During the last recession, then recovery, I believe that like the first people out were probably the last people back in terms of hiring. Businesses don't always hire back the people they let go, you know, in a downturn. I had read something that, you know, if I'm an employer, I may want to hire someone who maybe is a little more skilled, you know, so I could get more out of them. Have you looked at that? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you mean usually it's the folks that are most skilled, most highly educated, best trained, that are the last to lose their job or hours or income. And if they do, they're the first to be rehired, right? It makes sense. You know, they're going to be the most productive, and it makes most business sense for employers to hire those folks back. I'm sure that's going to be the case here. Although I do think the fallout from all this means some bigger, longer term changes that are going to have big implications for lots of different groups within the labor market, both skilled and unskilled. So, I think it's something that, you know, we're all going to have to struggle with for, you know, a long period of time. But you know, generally it's true that if you're more skilled, more educated, better trained, you know, you're going to do better both, you know, going into this and coming out of this.
Have you done any research or looked any at all into how this might impact education and training those workers? Has that been anything you've researched?
I haven't. I mean, I do think because there will be broader changes in the labor market as a result of this, that, you know, it may require changes in the way we train and educate our workers. I mean, certainly it means that some parts of the economy, the demand for labor is going to be much weaker for much longer. One could imagine that, you know, this is going to be very disruptive to travel, you know, business travel. You know, again, I'm going back to my own personal experience. You know, after the wages and salaries, I paid my employees and rent. The next biggest expense was my travel budget. I know for sure that I'm not going back to the kind of travel we were doing before, just because of, you know, what we're doing now, Zoom, not only internally with my own employees, but with my clients, and, you know, just business. And I think people are going to realize that, you know, this is a very efficient way of doing business. Travel will come back. It just will, it won't come back in the same way. It'll take a lot longer to get back to where it was. And so that affects a lot of business, a lot of people's livelihoods, right? I mean, everything from the folks in the travel industry, airline industry, you know, people
working at the airport.
Yeah. I mean, dislocation in the labor market. So that's going to require big changes in the way, you know, we think about, you know, who we train, retrain, how we do it, what kind of jobs we're training them for. So I think there's going to be a lot of adjusting all around.
You know, I think we're, for the most part in this country, we're very lucky that, you know, we spend money on, you know, discretionary money on entertainment, whether it's movies or iPhones. It's almost discretionary, right? Or
sure.
Baseball, which I miss tremendously right now.
Being an LA Dodger fan, I'm sure.
Chicago Cubs.
Oh, okay.
Really? Stick with
That's
the hometown
a surprise.
Team.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. Hometown team.
Yeah. But you guys are crazy, Cubbies.
We are. We are true blue. As they say, blue. We bleed Cubby blue, not Dodger blue. But but that's going to change all of that. You know, it's for the time being, you know, they've talked about a lot of different plans for baseball to either do it all in Arizona or Arizona and Florida.
I hadn't heard that.
Those industries are going to be hit by this because movies are going to have to put in all kinds of new, the sets will have to have all kinds of new health procedures. I guess everyone will, not just manufacturing and retail.
Yeah, I mean, I think any activity that brings large numbers of people together or even groups of people together will be affected, at least until we have a vaccine that's widely distributed across the globe. I mean, I can't see those activities really getting up to any kind of speed until that happens. Even if governments say, go ahead and do it, I can't imagine people, you know, going to want to do it just because they don't want to get sick. If the vaccine is 12, 18 months from now, those industries are going to be very hard pressed over that period of time. And then even after that, again, going back to our earlier discussion, it's going to take a while to get back to anything resembling something I think people would consider normal. Having said all that, though, I mean, you know, people certainly are going to have a lot of pent-up demand. You know, they're going to want to do stuff.
Exactly.
As soon as the coast is clear, I suspect that they'll do it. I think people are going to go back and watch the Cubs. I think people are going to go watch rock concerts. You know, I think people are going to, they're going to do those things. So that I'm not too worried about that once we get on the other side of this virus. But, you know, some of the other activities, travel, business travel in particular, it could take a while. And then there's going to be other big changes around the use of space, you know, office space, certainly retail space. I mean, given everyone's now online and learning how to do grocery shopping online and everything else, you know, it's hard to imagine that's not going to have an impact on brick and mortar retailers. That was a trend that was already underway, obviously, before the virus. That only gets kick-charged here. So mobility will change. You know, the proportion of the population that was moving was already declining because of the aging of the population. That probably will, you know, be accelerated. So there's all kinds of broader macro industry changes that we're probably going to have to deal with and adjust to. Ball game, I don't see that changing. You know, once they give us the coast is clear.
I'll be there.
Yep.
My last question to you would be, What do you see at the end of the year? I mean, looking ahead, where do you think we're going to be as a you know, workforce?
It's going to be a slog. I mean, because I'm an economist, I'll paint the picture with the numbers, the unemployment rate. I mean, that, you know, before all this, we were at a 3.5% unemployment rate, 50-year low, tight labor market. Businesses were struggling to find workers. Wage growth was accelerating even for the folks at the bottom part of the income distribution. We're going to peak out in April, 15 to 20%. You know, got to go back to Great Depression to see that. Once businesses restart, which I expect May, June, July, that unemployment rate, we'll see some job growth, unemployment will come in, but it'll probably settle in the high single digit area, 7, 8, 9%. So let's say by election day, November, if you told me the unemployment rate was 8%, I don't think I'd argue with you. Now, of course, this is nationwide. And then I think we just stay there until we get a vaccine and people feel comfortable. And then we'll think things will start kicking back into gear. It'll take a little bit of time, but it'll kick back in gear. People will want to travel. There'll be a lot of pent-up demand, you know, for ball games. We'll get a lot more job growth. Unemployment will start to come in. But, to go from 8% back to something you might consider full employment, you know, say 3, 4%, 5%, that's going to take time. And probably, you know, if everything sticks to script and we don't get hit by something else, you know, we're talking 2023, 2024. So this is a long haul. It's not, we're getting back to 3.5% anytime soon. So I think we just need to get our minds around that reality, adjust to it, and think about policies. Lawmakers, Congress, administration should be thinking about policies to help speed up that timeline.
Thank you, Mark Sandy. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ramona. It was a pleasure to be on Work on Progress. Anytime. Call me back in a year. We'll see how my projections panned out. And hopefully they're better than I actually projected.
I'm actually going to call you before then, I think.
So. Okay, very good.
Thank you. You are listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Our producer is Larry Buell. Our executive producers are Joan Lynch and Melissa Panzer. Thank you again. Talk to you next time.